Hello, everyone. Tyler Swanson here, host of the Bipartisan Podcast and founder of the Bipartisan Post. Before we get started with this episode, I would like to say thank you for your support and for listening to the Bipartisan Podcast every week. We truly, truly appreciate it. We at the Bipartisan Post are committed to providing listeners with quality discussions that provide a unique perspective on divisive issues by showcasing the bipartisan lens. These times are some of the most divided in recent history, and we could use your support in spreading the message of bipartisanship throughout the country. To help us out, you can visit our Patreon, which is linked in the episode description and on thebipartisanpost.com. For just $3 a month, patrons will receive a shout-out on the podcast, website, and will be given access to the Bipartisan Post Discord to chat with members of our team and other members of the community. You can donate just once or make it recurring to continue your support. Thanks again, and enjoy the show. Hello again. Right before we get started, this podcast was recorded at 9 p.m. Central Time on November 5th, 2020, so the events we discussed may have changed by the time you hear this. However, our overall discussions will be relevant for weeks and months to come, so make sure to listen to the end. Thank you again, and enjoy.
Lost in the whirlwind of Harvard academia.
This is the Bipartisan Podcast.
The Eagle has landed.
Hello, and welcome to a special episode of the Bipartisan Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Swanson.
I'm Luke Webster.
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention, Nathan's not here, so we're joined by Hannah Johnson. Hello, Hannah.
Hello.
I was waiting for you because your name is next alphabetically, but I'm Will Schrefferman.
All good. So this is probably going to be the episode of the podcast that becomes out of date fastest of anything we've ever recorded, but I still think it'd be fun to talk about. So of course, it's election week. We have postponed talking or having this podcast for a couple days because there has just been so much going on. But now it's Thursday night. The race seems to be forming up, although it's still very unclear. So we're going to start off by giving all of our takes about this election. You know, of course, it's been stressful for everybody. We've all been watching intently. And we'll talk about that first. Then we'll kind of go over, you know, the process of this week, how it's evolved to where we are now. And maybe some other discussion will come out of that as well, because there's definitely going to be a lot going forward that happens. So to start off, I just want to hear some takes. And Will, I want to hear your take first.
I just really hope that CNN let Wolf Blitzer sleep. That man has been on my TV screen for what feels like 72 hours straight. But no, in all seriousness, this is an election unlike any other. And, you know, I mean, these words will be heard, you know, potentially weeks from now. But sitting here on November 5th, it appears incredibly profoundly likely that Joe Biden will be elected the next president of the United States based off of the states that are left and the amount of votes that are being counted and the nature of those votes being mail-in votes. But there's a lot of uncertainty about it, and you just have to be patient. You have to wait for the votes to be counted. It's easy to get impatient. It's easy to cry foul. It's easy to do, you know, it's easy to go up, you know, and give a press conference where you flail around aimlessly. But at the end of the day, you just have to be patient. I mean, and Joe Biden has done a phenomenal job of just being patient, of not prematurely declaring victory. And you can say the exact opposite about the sitting president as of now, Donald Trump. I mean, he has been stoking division. He has been stoking chaos. I mean, there's just nothing like it. You have to be patient. You have to wait for the legally cast votes to be counted. That's all there is to it. And it's very clear who is and who isn't doing that right now for me. But it has been an interesting week. That's for sure.
Yes, it's to say the least. Thanks for your take, Will. Luke, let's hear from your side of the aisle here about what's going on this week.
So I agree, Will. Data that's left at this point, it does look like Joe Biden is going to be president, which makes me very happy, but you know, I can't really nothing about that. I will say I was pleased with the rest of the results down. Just as looking, it's looking like the Republicans are going to hold the Senate, which is going to be essential to kind of checking that power in the executive. I think that, you know, I shudder to think what might have happened, what kind of rash moves might have been made had the Democrats taken the Senate and gone ahead with certain things, not thinking in the future, like, oh, what will happen if Republicans take back power? So I'm kind of glad that, you know, at least we're going to have a little bit of some kind of status quo, if that makes sense. As far as like how ballots are going, you know, I hate waiting, but and quite honestly, I'm ready for this to be over. I've been ready for this to be over for many months now. But you know, it is important all the ballots get counted and all the ballots which are which counted at this time. You know, I don't want election official states to step it up, but I mean, I would not appreciate it if that makes it any better. I don't know, but I'll go ahead and pass it over to Hannah.
Yeah, Hannah, let us know, and also welcome back. It's good to have you back on the podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, I do agree. I am cautiously optimistic for a Biden win, but I do think it's going to remain close. And I will say that I'm a little scared to say that just because I don't want to get too hopeful, because it is more likely that Biden will win, but Trump does still have a path to victory. So, I mean, I predicted it would be a close race, but this is a little too close for my liking. I'm like particularly curious about if the election comes down to the Supreme Court and like what stance that Trump is going to take around that, because currently like he's just critiquing legal votes that happen to leave Democratic being counted, which I'm not too surprised at considering he spent so many months telling his supporters not to vote by mail. But I think it's just going to be a really interesting next few weeks and a couple months before the next official term starts.
It's worth noting on the Supreme Court point that just because Donald Trump wants to go to the Supreme Court, that does not give him a mandate to just start a Supreme Court case. There has to be a reason. The justices have to take and accept that reason for the case being litigated, and it has to go forth through the judicial process. But Donald Trump simply saying, I want a case, does not equate to there being a Supreme Court case. And I think, you know, obviously Bush v. Gore, the case comes to mind, but that was because there was a particular recount and there's a particular issue with the expediency and urgency of the election that the Supreme Court intervened. But it was not at the behest of any particular candidate, just willing it to be so. So I would not expect it to go to the Supreme Court as much as Trump wants to protest and complain to the opposite effect.
Yeah. Yeah, I think great point, Will. I'll just drop my take in as well. Of course, this has been probably one of the most wild weeks of the Trump presidency, which is kind of fitting that it would be near what is possibly the end of the Trump presidency, because this thing is just absolutely wild. I think I've spent the last 3 days on my phone doom scrolling more than I have in the past 3 months, just completely refreshing the results and going over and over again. The race that I'm most pleased by is Georgia, because as I mentioned, and I think it was the last podcast, Georgia is the one that I was watching, because it was the one that I felt like was most likely to go blue. Looking at the electoral map, you know, president wise to start out with, you know, definitely not quite what I expected. Not off by too much, though. I expected Florida to go blue. I think a lot of people did, just by, you know, what the polls showed. But Trump really, you know, showed out there and won a lot of the vote that Democrats needed to, which is surprising. I thought Texas would be a little bit closer. But of course, that's Texas. And, you know, I think, you know, give it 12 more years and you might see Texas be a blue state, depending on the state of the country. Down ballot races, going to touch on those. Republicans, you know, regardless of what happens at the top of the ballot, President Trump, President Biden, you know, they have a lot to be happy with the fact that they were able to hold the Senate. Even I think they flipped one seat. Well, they did lose another, but still, that's pretty good for them. And they also took a lot of House seats, which they did not expect to take, and which kind of showed a big repudiation of, you know, how Democrats might be doing across the country in certain districts, which that's a big indicator for, you know, what's going to happen. Should Biden be elected, we're going to have a Democratic House and a Republican Senate, most likely, because we'll probably see, you know, Georgia go to a runoff. That still means, you know, does not guarantee the Democrats anything. So it's really insane. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm frightened as I'm and a little anxious, as I'm sure you all are and a lot of the people listening are. But of course, I think we might be finding out, you know, within the next day or two, and we'll try to get a special episode up when we get final results. Now that we've all kind of dropped our takes, which I appreciate hearing from each of you, I want to kind of go back and kind of recap how this past week has gone, just so we can, you know, kind of understand how we got to where we are now and to where we are going to be going next. So let's start with the prologue. You know, the day before Election Day, had 100 million early votes, which are early votes in person and mail-in votes registered, processed, which massive number. That's already, you know, you're 30 million short of the total 2016 vote count. So going into Election Day, we knew that there was going to be probably a delay in counting because of the early vote and the mail-in vote count and the different rules that states had to follow regarding that. Going into Election Day, you know, results start coming in. Florida starts to very close, and then it becomes clearer and clearer throughout the night that Trump has taken it, and that Trump has taken a lot of state, a big lead in a lot of states. You know, at the end of the night or around midnight on Wednesday, I believe he still had the lead in Wisconsin, Michigan, big lead in Pennsylvania, big lead in Georgia. He'd won Texas, Florida, ones that Democrats were looking at, and Arizona, Nevada, you couldn't really tell yet. So everything else was kind of decided though. You know, then around one or two in the morning on, I guess, early Wednesday morning, President Trump comes out, declares victory. We find out, you know, the next morning, votes are coming in. Doesn't look like that's so, because all the early votes are now being counted and the margin continues to shrink. So throughout the past couple of days, we've seen the margin shrink, most notably in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, North Carolina. Trump still has a big lead. It's probably going to be called for him shortly, but we're still not sure. Biden now has the lead in Arizona, although that is shrinking, but it's still, you know, not entirely sure that that will flip to being red. And Nevada is just like, we're not sure with Nevada. They're just taking their sweet time. I think Nevada is just, you know, enjoying the fact that they're a pretty relevant state for a moment. I don't know. What do you all think about that? We've seen Biden make some remarks as well this week, saying he wants every vote to be counted, saying that he's not outright declaring victory, but that he's confident he will win once all the votes are counted. Judging by where the vote counts are heading, you know, it makes sense why he would say that. And then just about an hour or so ago, President Trump spoke in the White House, calling some votes illegal, saying that when you count all the legal votes, he wins. He's had a lot of gripes to make about mail-in vote counting, saying that he even said that he might lose Georgia by a little bit. He, you know, he's talking a lot about Pennsylvania and the vote counts there being suspicious. He did say a lot of false statements in this, because there was a lot of misinformation in his.
I would go as far as to say there was not a true statement in what he said.
I mean, I would say that the true statement was that he might lose Georgia. There's a lot up in the air. President Trump he's kind of flailing. He looks dejected from just the way he's been speaking. You know, he's a lot less energetic than he was when he declared victory. And things are still not sure right now, currently, as the votes stand. So at this very moment, Donald Trump is ahead by 1,797 votes in Georgia. Joe Biden is ahead by 11,438 votes in Nevada. President Trump's ahead by 41,305 votes in Pennsylvania, and Joe Biden is ahead by 46,257 votes in Arizona. So there is still a lot of votes left to be counted.
Still counting.
Things can flip. You know, we probably won't know. Maybe by midnight tonight we'll know, and we can put out a special update that I'll add onto this podcast, or that I'll record myself. But, you know, things are going crazy.
Oh,
so
I see how it is.
I'll rally whoever's up, and we'll make a short podcast about it. But I kind of just, we did takes. Now I kind of want to talk about, you know, predictions. What's going to come next? Which states do we think are going to flip, if any? Or is this kind of vote count going to remain steady? What's going to happen next in terms of legal challenges? We'll go the same order we did with takes. Will, go ahead.
Before this, I have a quick question for my dear friend Luke. Something I've been asking my conservative friends is who are politically inclined and saw the press conference this evening where Trump decided to claim victory and dispute the process of the election without any evidence. You know, based off of what you said initially, Luke, I think you would agree. but that was extremely not okay. And I just want to make sure that my conservative and Republican friends are looking at that and seeing the same thing. And that was not okay. That was anti-democratic.
Yeah, no, I'm going to agree with you there. Well, you know, I hate making excuses for the president, but you know, I think it's just in that same vein of his own personal narcissism of like, you know, I have to win. There's no way I can lose.
Right.
And
that's not a justification, merely an explanation.
Yes. But I guess the fact of the matter is that because there's like an unprecedented number of mail-in ballots, there's just the systems that are in place to accept these ballots are just not equipped for that. And so I can understand why people might be skeptical of the process, regardless of whether or not, you know, there actually are, you know, hundreds of thousands of fraudulent ballots. I can understand the sentiment. But I don't agree with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That's fair. And I think so that kind of feeds into, I guess, my prediction. I mean, this is the same man that claimed the 3 million votes he lost by in 2016 in the popular vote were fraudulent. He impaneled a commission of the federal government to investigate voter fraud, headed by Kris Kobach, Secretary of State of Georgia. And found they found absolutely no evidence. So I mean, there is no limit, is what I'm saying, to the degree to which Trump will continue to flail like this. You know, there's not a point at which the Associated Press, all of the trusted organizations, and the transparent bipartisan secretaries of state in these states declare victory. I mean, Georgia, the Secretary of State of Georgia is a Republican. Like, this is not just some evil Democratic cabal being run, like some would have you think. But I, you know, there's no degree to which those democratic processes, those objective processes, come together. And Trump says, "Drug, okay, I accept it." He's made it so clear he's not going to do that. So I think everything going forward is a matter of the degree to which other Republicans stay around Trump and the degree to which they don't. I don't think I've seen anything to this point that tells me which way it will go. I mean, talking to some of my friends, they're all in the same boat as Luke. But I think, you know, it comes down to Michael Pence, it comes down to, you know, Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, Mitch McConnell, powerful Republicans in the Senate. It comes down to Republican commentators to decide whether they're going to stick with Trump and flail alongside him and his family and the Rudy Giuliani's and the Donald Trump Jr.'s of the world, or whether they're going to look at it and say, this is not okay. You can't just keep claiming this. It's not true. You have no legal basis. And urge the patients for votes to be counted and the process to be followed. So I think that's where my eye is. I think the way that they go is what determines whether we go to a, you know, more peaceful transition of power where Trump just goes off into the ether, or whether this becomes a protracted battle that nobody emerges well from.
Yeah, great take, Will. I'm going to go back again to Luke. I want to hear your perspective on, you know, what's coming next.
So one of the fun things that about an election is that you get to use predictors and you can like fill out your own map. And I have to highlight before I get into my predictions that a 269-269 tie is still possible. So, you know, less 2020 is over.
Don't you know, do that to me, Luke.
There is still a potential. It is still a thing that could happen. But as far as my actual predictions go, I'm honestly more optimistic. I think that, you know, Trump will miss. I don't know if he'll be happy about it, and he will probably complain about it for many years after, but I think he'll leave office. That being said, as far as like litigation goes, you know, we were talking about the Supreme Court doesn't necessarily have to take up that case. I think much more likely that kind of stuff gets settled in circuit courts and state courts over, you know, the Supreme Court. But I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot of litigation that ends up, you know, massively turning the tide of the election one way or the other. So I think that everything will, the dust will eventually settle here and we'll be able to kind of figure out where to go from there. You know, as far as like a Republican strategy at this point, you know, if it becomes clear that Biden has won the presidency, I think your main goal is trying to figure out where to move the party post-Trump and, you know, concern yourself less with the man in the White House and more with, you know, the significant voter turnout that Republicans had during this election cycle. You know, I think that the Republican Party definitely made some inroads into the Hispanic community, something that, you know, if you would have asked me in 2016, if you would have told me that in 2016, rather, I definitely wouldn't have believed. I think that, you know, the focus of the Republican Party just needs to be looking forward after this election, should it become clear that Donald Trump is not going to win.
Yeah, that's a really great point you made, Luke, and I'm going to get to that when I give my take. But Hannah, I want to hear from you.
So I'll actually start by saying that I'm not too confident in any of my predictions, just because the races are so close at this point and surprises do happen, but here they are. So of the Pennsylvania votes left to be counted, I know that most of them are supposed to lean Democratic, so I do think there's a good chance it goes blue, but I also want to be really careful not to count on it, because we can win without it. Granted, it does put a lot of pressure on the remaining states, but I mean, just judging like by election night and how like red it was for a while, it'll definitely be interesting to track. I think I probably have the most optimism in Georgia, which I did not expect to be saying, but with, as you said, Tyler, less than 2,000 votes, I do think there's a real chance Biden takes it, which would be really historic. And, you know, it would take that pressure off, especially on the nation who's waited with bated breath. Much like, you know, Trump winning the blue wall in 2016, like this would be a really powerful win. I would rather have seen it with Texas and Florida, but I would absolutely love to take this as well. North Carolina, I think that's safely Trump's at this point. I don't see that changing. I know that there are votes left to be counted, but I honestly think they it's probably safe to call it at this point. Arizona, I'm really not sure about. I see it shifting either way because the mail-in ballots are actually pretty split between the parties, I'm pretty sure at this point. So, and Biden doesn't have a super strong lead there from my last count. I definitely think it was too early to count. I think both AP and Fox did. I wouldn't have called it yet. I'm hoping that we keep it, but I really do want to be cautious. In terms of Nevada, I don't even know if anyone knows what's going on in Nevada. Like I think it's up to 10,000 votes at this point, and we're not getting that frequent of updates. So I don't even know where to begin to predict it.
I believe they said noon tomorrow is when Clark County will be releasing. Noon, okay. Friday, that is, for time's sake. Yeah.
The once daily update. Yeah, that's definitely not often. I think Biden's lead increased in this last batch of votes, but it's so close and I just don't want to assume anything.
Yeah, for sure. We know that, yeah, if Biden wins Georgia, that is the path that puts us on a potential 269 to 269 tie, which would be something. And we'll get into that when that happens. I don't even want to begin to talk about that.
No, I don't want that. I refuse to.
I think we can all. Notion. I think we can all collectively agree as a nation that we don't want that to happen because gross. Going by these races though, there's still a lot up in the air. I do think Georgia is on the cusp of flipping, and it possibly will flip. Same thing for Pennsylvania. Hannah, I agree with you that North Carolina is pretty much guaranteed to stay red, and I think Tom Tillis will keep his seat there in the Senate. I think Cal Cunningham will not win, despite his affair being leaked to the public. Helping him in the polls didn't help him enough to get him the election. Still find that funny. Nevada, I have no idea. I would like for that to go blue, but of course, the way they're doing things, personally, not a huge fan of it at all. I don't like the way they're counting that and really taking their time. Arizona as well, still really up in the air, especially now that the vote margin continues to tighten. That being said, you know, if Biden takes Georgia, he doesn't exactly need Arizona because there's just, you know, that's kind of offsetting the votes. Alaska is, you know, one that, it's interesting that it hasn't been called yet, just because there's not been a lot of votes cast or not a lot of votes counted yet. We had a statement earlier today from the Democratic Senate candidate there. I believe his name is Dr. Al Gross. I might be wrong, but he did say that, you know, he believes that he will win the election, and there's only, I think, 44% of the votes counted yet, or 44% still to be counted. So that is up in the air for him, although I do see that one going for Trump. So I think in the end, we'll probably see Biden win with anywhere between, you know, 295 and 309 or 306 electoral votes. We'll see where that goes. There's definitely going to be recounts, especially, I think, in Wisconsin, in Georgia, possibly Pennsylvania, depending on those final vote tallies, maybe even Arizona and Nevada as well. We don't know where those vote counts are going to end up. So this is going to be definitely a long, drawn out battle. Will it go to the Supreme Courts? Of course, I don't know. There's definitely going to be a lot of legal action, possibly on both sides, just as people try to, you know, hold their claims and do all that. So I don't know what exactly is going to come next, but I think for the Republican Party, you know, if Trump wins, you rally around that and you kind of use this to stick in the face of Democrats and, you know, say, just take that as a charge from the American people to go off and run the country as you see fit. But if, you know, if Trump loses here, there's two ways it can go. And it's either you see a much more, I think, malevolent Republican Party that believes they've been cheated out of an election and begins to play dirtier politics. And you see get a little bit more conspiratorial with QAnon rising a little bit more. I think that's definitely a possibility, although it's one of those darker paths that can be taken. Or you could see the party take kind of the Mitt Romney route and start rebuking the Trump politics and becoming a more, you know, accepting party to try to expand their base of Hispanic Latino voters and possibly try to get more of the African-American vote in ensuing years. Because I think if they do that, they definitely have a path to retake the House, to retake the presidency and hold the Senate. That's, you know, integral for them. Of course, we'll see where that happens. You know, what we're definitely going to start seeing in the next coming months, I think, I would say possibly even before Inauguration Day, is a lot more gossip about who's going to be running for the Republicans in 2024. There's already been some stirrings, some names floating around. And I think as the results finally come in and start finishing, you'll see a lot of those personalities start going on Fox News or other outlets and start becoming those talking heads that you'll see more and more until, you know, 2023 when they finally announce. So that's my kind of crystal ball predictions of what's going to come next. I don't know what you all think of that.
The misinformation point you bring up is good. And this is a question I wanted to ask people. As you're doing your doom scrolling, Tyler, and I'm sure Hannah and Luke, you've both seen the amount of vitriol and misinformation that's out there. I mean, right now, definitely, and will continue to be out there. You know, the false claims about, like Luke, you were kind of making fun of it earlier, but the false claims of thousands of lost ballots being mysteriously found in Georgia. You know, I've had multiple friends, people I know, you know, totally dispute the outcome of the election, spread misinformation online, and just refuse to accept that Trump will lose. And I don't know. I'm just wondering, how are you guys talking to people in that boat? How are you talking to, you know, people you see posting on Facebook, you know, the opposite of what is true at this point? Is there a way that you found that engaging that? And because I think that's one of the bigger threats, is that the people that are saying that now, you know, what are they doing in a couple months from now, when a Biden administration has been inaugurated, potentially? That worries me, and I'm curious if you have thoughts.
These are conversations you have to take very carefully. You should tread right. Lightly, because, you know, it's not a time to answer, you know, conspiracy and division with more division and anger and insult, because then you're just further antagonizing somebody who already disagrees with you and who already feels antagonized by the country and the political system as a whole. I think what's really important, what I've tried to do with people who are, you know, not necessarily questioning the results, but are agreeing with the president that there needs to be recount in some places, is like, yeah, sure, you can do recounts. You can, you know, you are within your right to have a recount be done, and you are within your right to, you know, to sue if you feel like you must. But should you, or should, you know, the results of the election might not even warrant that happening. If Biden comes out ahead by, you know, tens of thousands of votes in Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, probably won't in Georgia, but it's a possibility. Is it worth trying for those recounts? Is it really worth, you know, dragging this through months of Supreme Court battles and strife when it's pretty clear that that President Trump has lost and the nation spoke. We need to make sure that we shut down all conspiracy theories because we don't need more of that division in the country, but we need to do so in a way that's compassionate and that's respectful of, you know, Trump supporters and Republicans, and not, you know, stoking division, calling them out, calling them racist or sexist, or insulting them in ways that will further antagonize them and push them to, you know, more destructive ends. Any other thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I actually do. So I definitely agree with you, Will. I'm from North Dakota, so it's safe to say that my social media has essentially just been a hailstorm of posts about the Democrats stealing the election. I think the tactic that I'm taking right now is just kind of encouraging some Google searches, because unfortunately, like, no matter what I say, a lot of people just don't want to be convinced. So whether that's seeing the facts themselves or hearing it from someone they trust, at some point I have just had to agree to disagree. But I have had some serious, respectful conversations with my friends, and those are actually yielding good results, because, you know, if you're aggressive, they're just going to get defensive and become more set in their views, which creates more division, and it's just, you know, a never-ending process. So I'd say, like, my best results have come from respectful conversations, but there is definitely a point where you can't convince people.
That's fair. I'm happy to hear you've had success. I think that's definitely the right way to go about it.
You know, I haven't personally been on Twitter a whole lot.
This is probably a good days to have not been on Twitter.
You know, I, those people that, like, if I see enough things, I feel to address something, and you know, you can go look at my Twitter feed. Occasionally, if I see something trending that I don't like, I'll clarify it. This is actually what this is about. Don't worry. And you know, I just, again, I'll reiterate this. I think that I can understand why people are less than trusting when it comes to these election results. I mean, again, it's the sheer number of mail-ins, and, you know, like, as regardless of whether or not those claims are true, which, I mean, it's almost assuredly not, I, where they're coming from. And I can understand, you know, the fear into that, because quite honestly, it would be really easy to just, like, flood an election with mail-in ballots. And I can understand the fear, even if it's not, you know, founded.
Going forward, I think this is one last topic I want to touch on before we wrap up, because we've been going for a little while. But I want to make this podcast, you know, as true to the moment as possible. We're probably going to see mail-in ballots more and more in future elections, especially as we continue to grapple with COVID-19. Of course, we don't know when it's going to be over, but this is going to have a lasting impact on the country. There's going to be, I think, a much more widely accepted belief that mail-in votes are good, I think, by the end of this election, although I can't confirm, you know, that, because we don't know the aftermath. What do you all think? Do you think there will be more mail-in votes cast in future years? Do you think that states will get better at handling this? And do you think people themselves will appreciate the process, or will prefer the process of mail-in voting to going to voting in person?
I say more early voting and count the darned mail-in ballots before election day. No more of these silly moratoriums like you see in Pennsylvania, where you can't start counting them until 7 a.m., even though you've received them days before, because that's what's creating this delay. Do those two things, and I think this works well.
Yeah, that's a great point. I know in the polling, or the county where I worked here in Illinois, you know, votes were being tabulated as they came in. They'd be you know, checked, they'd be counted, they'd be initialed, and then they were tabulated. So they were, you know, we were on it. And I would love if every county in the country did that with their mail-in votes. But of course, every county is different because we are in a massive country. Hannah, Luke, any ideas?
I can go.
Sure.
So I would partially disagree with you. Well, Tyler, I should say. I do think that there will be more trust in the absentee system, but I don't think that will be entirely bipartisan. I think that Democratic trust will increase a lot, and I do think that Republican trust will as well. But for people that happily voted for Trump, when a figure they trust has been telling them for months not to believe mail-in ballots, and they're now attributing that to the reason they may lose the election, I really don't think that sentiment is going to change, at least for a while, until someone new comes in to tell them that those do work. So I think we might continue to see a politicized split with mail-in ballots, at least for the next election, depending on, of course, how the next 4 years go, or 2 years, I suppose. But I also wanted to say that I do agree with Will about counting earlier. That's definitely a main issue of this election. And I think if we do that and then, you know, promote also early voting in person, that this can definitely be something that works long term and large scale.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Hannah. I totally see the point you're making there. I know that mine was definitely more of a hot take of, you know, based on kind of my personal biases. I appreciate your perspective. And Luke, being our sole Republican here tonight, you're a little bit outnumbered, but I would love to hear what you think about this, because this is, I think, an issue that will be really hot in the Republican Party for the next few years.
So I'll say this. I'm much more of a fan of in-person voting. I think that, you know, after coronavirus and once everything eventually goes back to normal, you know, I think we should be encouraging more people to vote in person. I, you know, just watching like the chaos of all of these mail-in ballots being counted has just shown me that I don't like the idea of people mailing in ballots. And I think that, you know, going forward, if you can show up to the polls, you really should. And, you know, we should be saving mail-in ballots for the military, for people who are physically incapable of making it to the poll. I think that, you know, doing it the old fashioned way might not be such a bad thing.
All right, sure. Thanks for your point there, Luke. I appreciate your perspective. I think it's, you know, you're definitely probably not wrong. And really, we'll see how the discourse goes over these next coming months and coming years. I do think, though, just one final thing I want to add is that I think the mail-in vote count has really enabled this election out, like this election turnout to be what it is, with, you know, there being so many votes cast. But alas, I could be wrong myself. That being said, we've been going for a while. I want to wrap it up so our listeners don't get too bored of us and can continue on with whatever they may be doing right now, because there's a lot going on. That being said, before we head out, I just want to remind listeners, if they enjoyed, to make sure to follow the podcast, to share it with their friends. Of course, this is a time of great division in the country, and what we really need is more bipartisan discourse in our lives. This is what we try to provide here. So try to spread this around to your friends, spread it around to your coworkers, your neighbors, and also visit the Bipartisan Post website. You can read a lot of articles that we are informing people on, you know, policies on issues in the country. And we also have a newsletter you can subscribe to, which we're going to be revamping shortly to provide a new experience for fans of the Bipartisan Post brand. Thank you very much, Hannah. Thank you very much for stepping in Nathan's absence. And we will see you probably very soon in a special episode. We'll see what comes next. Thank you, and see you in the next episode.